Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Sublimely Gothic, the podcast devoted only to the most sordid and macabre tales ever penned to paper. Here you shall explore the darkest jewels of literature with gothic enthusiasts Amy and Jess. Enter this realm at your own risk, for the night is dark and full of terrors. Welcome to the show, everyone. This is Sublimely Gothic. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And we are doing the Christmas edition. Yay! Yeah, we're recording this in later November, but it will be airing either on Christmas Day or maybe a few days before that. And so for the Christmas special, we decided to do, big shocker, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens.
The good old Christmas Carol that I'm sure we've all seen at least one production of the play, either on TV or in real life at a high school, who knows?
Do you know what my family's Christmas tradition was? The one movie that we would always watch on Christmas Day?
What was that?
Muppets Christmas Carol.
Oh, how funny. Oh my gosh, I forgot they had a Christmas Carol show.
Yes, with Michael Caine, and he's so good.
Oh, wow. Well, now I'm going to have to watch that. There's apparently an FX series called A Christmas Carol. And I thought, first of all, it's a series, which this book isn't long. I don't even think it's considered a novella, right? Is that right? And then second, I was like, how can you make this like an 8-part series? But apparently they did. I don't know.
Well, yeah. So for me, I'm going to say right out, this was actually a timely read for me. You know, I'm not the biggest Dickens fan. It helped a lot listening to the audiobook, but because his style is very tedious.
Mm-hmm.
But the story in and of itself with Scrooge was a little timely for me, and I could relate to it a little bit just because, not that I consider myself a Scrooge most of the time, but I have very recently, as you and I have discussed, you know, off the mic, that I'm currently at war with certain elements of my university's HR to try and reclassify my position so that I can get a salary raise that properly reflects my experience and skill level. Okay. And that has basically been, as you know, like pulling teeth. And so there's been a lot of times, as much as I like my job, getting really frustrated and basically in a sense feeling exploited by my job. And, you know, I will go back and forth between like, you know, I want to be grateful that I have a job and that I'm not struggling like many other people are struggling during the pandemic. But at the same time, like being destitute during a pandemic should not be the baseline that I'm working with.
I think you make a very good point because I think I've struggled with that as well. I think I'm fortunate, you know, to have a job. But then sometimes it's like you get frustrated and then there's that whole, you're exactly right. You know, well, some other people don't have a job. I grew up. When I came into the workforce is what I'll say, was kind of during the Great Recession and the attitude, my whole career, I think, has been, you should just be lucky that you have a job. You should be grateful that you have a job, you know, bonuses, things like that, for a lot of people in my generation are a thing of the past. So, I think that's a very already interesting perspective. Kind of from a personal level, and this is kind of silly, I'm trying to eat a little healthier and reading some of the Christmas feasts in this book was a little killer for me at times. Yes.
Yeah. So for me, like with the whole like greediness of Scrooge, you know, it kind of made me self-reflect that I'm not by any means going to abandon my pursuit of getting what I feel is appropriate for my salary, but at the same time, I need to work on not being consumed by it. That, you know, I live a pretty darn good middle-class existence, and my husband and I are fortunate enough where we have nothing big going on during a pandemic where we can just, you know, stay at home and ride this out. And, you know, just be grateful for the things we have, but at the same time still pursue, you know, those fights, but don't let them like overwhelm me.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good perspective. It's I think we all have a little bit of inner Scrooge sometimes. So I think that's good to admit. I don't think we are all as lucky to have any ghosts of Christmas present, past and future sometimes, but yeah.
Yeah, so Yeah, so Christmas Carol, probably the first Dickens I've ever really read, because again, I'd sort of lean away from Dickens. His stories are brilliant, and I love watching BBC adaptations of them, but just his style is just typically not my thing.
You know what? You were my friend Megan. I told her this is what we were reading, and she was like, "Yeah, the man is a fan of a run-on sentence." And I was like, "I kind of didn't understand." But when I was reading it, I felt like his, and maybe this is what she meant, it was very meandering to me. So sometimes it was hard for me to follow completely because I, you know, it would be like. It reminded me a lot of an author I really like. Her name is Jenny Lawson, but that's kind of the style that she writes in too, which I enjoy because I like her. But it took me a little bit to get used to with this story.
Yeah, and certainly by reading Christmas Carol, it made me realize just how accurate the Muppets Christmas Carol was and them using so much of the real dialogue.
That's really funny. I had no idea. Like we were talking a little bit before. I think I forgot the Muppets had a Christmas Carol, but now I remember seeing a production of A Christmas Carol when I was a kid. I think we traveled, like I've said, I'm from a small town, to a larger city to see it. But that would have been a fun thing to revisit, rather than read it. I mean, you know, or read it and revisit it. That would be great.
Yeah, like in Muppet's Christmas Carol, Gonzo is Charles Dickens narrating the story, like in the background.
Oh, that's fun. I wonder who Scrooge is. Now I'm so
Scrooge is
curious.
Michael Caine.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's pretty perfect.
Yeah, and I mean Michael Caine would have been brilliant in a normal adaptation of Ebenezer Scrooge, and the fact that he's in the Muppets Christmas Carol is just great.
How perfect. He's got a great voice. So.
But before, shall we get into our 30-second summaries?
Yes.
Yes. So you can go first. Like, I have total faith in you because this was 64 pages altogether.
Right. So we're doing 30 second today or 60?
No, so we're still doing 60
Oh, okay.
seconds.
Okay. All right, cool. I'm
Counting
gonna.
you in at
Okay.
3, 2, 1, go.
So there is a gentleman named as Ebenezer Scrooge, and he is just hates the world. Everybody is trying to steal his money, and he's full of humbug. So he is visited by three or four apparitions or ghosts, and they take him on various journeys within his life to see what the present was, what the past, his Christmases past and Christmases future were. And then at the end, he has a total change of heart and embraces Christmas and promises to do that even past Christmas.
Yay, with 16 seconds to go.
Well, it's pretty short, but so okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, I will count
Alrighty.
you in if you'd like.
Okay.
3, 2, 1.
So we've got this miserly banker, real estate guy, loaner, whatever, loan shark. He named Ebenezer Scrooge. He, as you said, hates the world, only cares about his money, but he doesn't even spend his money. He just hoards it all. And he has one nephew who invites him to Christmas, but he's like, no, screw that. And then he just all bah humbug. I hate Christmas. I hate the world. But then he's visited by his former deceased partner, Marley, who warns him, like, if you don't shape up, you're going to be just like me, wandering about the universe with all these heavy chains. So then he gets visited by the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, who teach him lessons about the value of Christmas and compassion and goodwill towards all men, yada, yada, yada. And then he reforms his ways and de decides to be a lot nicer to the people around him, especially to his clerk, Bob Cratchit, and his.
Beautiful. That was, oh no, that was perfect. I think you got the gist of it right there. Well, you mentioned, and I don't know if you want to share this, that you've watched the Muppets Christmas Carol, that was kind of a family tradition for you. So you were very well versed in the story before we read it.
Yes, before we read it, and not just Muppet Christmas Carol, I think a good chunk of every sort of
That's
animated series, they have their own rendition of the Christmas Carol.
Yeah. That's
very like awesome. The like one of the ones I've kind of added to my Christmas Carol repertoire that I like to watch is My Little Pony.
Oh, okay.
They have there's a Christmassy equivalent holiday in the My Little Pony universe. It's called A Heartswarming Eve.
Okay. Okay.
And so like they decide, oh, let me read you a story called A Heartswarming Tale. And it's basically their version of Christmas Carol with a Scrooge and everything.
Oh, how funny. You know, like I said, I'm beyond reading it. It's a story that I think it's funny to talk about, especially on this Gothic podcast, because it's a story that I think even if you haven't read it, you kind of know it. The words like calling somebody a Scrooge is not something that is designated to a certain like fandom, if you will.
Scrooge has become his own character in Disney, Uncle Scrooge the Duck.
Oh yeah,
Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, when he dives into the pile of money. Oh yeah. My gosh, I hear people reference that all the time. That's really funny. I don't know why I didn't think about it. Oh, I was thinking about I'm just trying to add to my nerd credentials, I guess. I am a big Doctor Who fan. And it kind of also reminded me of, there's an episode of Doctor Who where the Doctor is kind of Scrooge-like. I don't think it's like a rendition of the Christmas Carol. Maybe there is one and I just overlooked it. But the whole time, it gets cold and wintry and Christmassy and I want to watch Doctor Who because they always have a Christmas special. But it made me think of one of the episodes with Clara and the Doctor. Been a little while, but I don't know if anybody else is a Doctor Who fan.
So yeah, the way Dickens starts off the story, Jacob Marley was dead. Don't forget, Jacob Marley is dead. He's really, really dead.
He does a good job of repeating himself, Mr. Dickens.
I knew of course, again, by pop culture that's how the story begins, but I didn't realize he went on for a good three paragraphs about it. I'm like, we get it. He's dead.
Right. He hammers that home. A lot. I haven't read any other Dickens in the last 10 years. Maybe I did when I was younger, but I can't recall. I remember checking out maybe one of the books, but so his literary style I wasn't super familiar with. Now I feel like I'm a little more familiar with it. And I don't know if that's a technique or it's just him just being, I don't know, being crazy. I'm trying to get to the first page so I can look at that.
But anyway, he starts off that Jacob Marley is dead and introduces Scrooge as this, you know, moneylender who, you know, just works all the time, very miserly. He has one clerk that works under him, Bob Cratchit, and, you know, it's Christmas Eve, everyone's bustling about, being happy, and he's all, bah, humbug, and his nephew, Fred, comes along and is like, why will, like, come to Christmas dinner with us? And he's like, why the hell would I do that? He's like, why are you so happy? You're poor enough. And he's like, why are you so dismal? You're rich enough.
That was an interesting little exchange, wasn't it? That I also felt like sometimes maybe I can be the Scrooge of family dinners where it's like, come to dinner. And I'll be like, nah, I don't really want to do that. So there was a lot of reiteration on gathering in here, which is something that we're being told not to do this winter. Anyway.
Yeah. You know, just reading this, you know, makes me think about, and I've been thinking about Christmas a lot today, not just because of this podcast, but also listening to one of my favorite Harry Potter podcasts, The Fox and Fox Sound. They just went over one of the Christmas chapters in book 5.
You know, the other thing that I was thinking of other than Doctor Who, and I think there's with various, like, I'm just going to use the word fandom for lack of a better term, but there seems to be like certain ones that really like celebrate or embrace like Christmas. And I always associated that a little bit with Harry Potter, but I think it's because there are the Christmas ball is like a big part of a couple of those books. Am I right?
Oh yeah. Book 4. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so they have an exchange and, you know, Fred in Muppet Christmas Carol is one of the few like human characters played by an actual person. But then later after his nephew, he gets visited by these two gentlemen who are seeking like donations. And basically, again, in Muppet's Christmas Carol, they're played by, I forget, it's like the green skinned like professor or doctor and his assistant Beaker.
Oh, Beaker. Oh, yeah.
Beaker is my sister's favorite Muppet.
That was an excellent impression. Good job.
So they come in and they're like, would you like to give a donation? It's like, what can I put you down for? Nothing. You wish to be anonymous. I wish to be left alone. And the thing about this exchange really made me think of, like, are there no, like, jails or, like, poorhouses? And again, to bring things to real life, you know, just the whole sort of conservative stance on, you know, people, why should I have to pay taxes to pay for, like, someone else's laziness?
Right. Yeah.
And so Scrooge is kind of embodying that sort of position.
Well, and I think later on in the story, I think I highlighted this section. His words are kind of countered back to him by the ghost of Christmas future, I think that's
present.
Oh, present. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they're parroted back to him and he's just so ashamed because of it. But yeah, just, and it's funny because these aren't even the fact that he's taking such a strong stance, because again, these aren't government officials or anything like these, you know, this is the Victorian era where, again, charity and like taking care of the poor, like that's in the older tradition, you know, the government didn't give a crap about that. And that was left to, again, charities that were often associated with churches.
Well, that's something that I really noticed in this, more that I feel like maybe I hadn't noticed in the story and in the past, is the very heavy Christian themes. Like, now I know Christmas. Yeah, there's a whole thing about that I don't care to get into. But I thought some of the religious themes were really more overt than I had realized in past kind of familiarity with the story.
Really? Because my interpretation was the opposite. Like,
really?
I was surprised that there was so little mention of Jesus and all those things, and it was just more what I perceived to be a very secular perception of just general goodwill and compassion to humankind. So I was actually surprised that it was so much less so than I was anticipating.
I mean, I think that's, first of all, that's interesting, and maybe a little bit of my reading of it was kind of remembering some of my upbringing and kind of some of those themes. In that, I guess they didn't, you know, talk about like, oh, we're going to church tonight or whatever. So, but, you know, and the thing that I don't know and I wanted to look into was like Charles Dickens' own, like, it was he a person of faith or was he like kind of anti that? I don't know anything about the person. Oh man, haven't even looked at a picture of him until now. He's an interesting looking cat.
Yeah, no, I have no idea what is religious, but definitely in Scrooge and like kind of bringing up these sort of like socialist, you know, themes, you know, that's a theme in all of his books, like in terms of like Great Expectations and, you know, the Rags to Riches and a whole bunch of other things, Little Dorrit. And
well, because he kind of grew up in poverty, right?
Yeah, he is all about, his characters are either good or bad, and the good characters are always oppressed by either the crappy society that doesn't give a damn about them and the higher-ups in society that uphold that system. And so his is very revolutionary, burn it all down, like metaphorically.
Not gonna hate on that by any means. So I think that when we're talking about that and kind of politically, I feel like, you know, maybe that's a little bit of what tainted my thinking, is I feel like Christmas, at least in the United States, has been kind of politicized a little bit, aspects of it, you know, like people saying, you know, Merry, Happy Christmas, or, you know, or things like that. So I kind of thought about that throughout this, cut this out because I forgot where I was going. Sorry, Amy. I'm done.
Okay, so yeah, so Scrooge finally comes home and his door knocker basically looks like Jacob Marley.
Which is a little creepy. I'm really curious how that looks like in the Muppets movie.
Well, actually in the Muppets, they divide Jacob Marley into two characters. So there were two Marleys.
Oh, okay.
And they do that because the Muppets they use for Jacob and Robert Marley are the two old guys that are always on the balcony.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
True. There was something about mankind that we loved. I think it was their money. Ah!
that makes me think of
Yeah, so in Babette, it's just, yeah, it morphs into one of those guys' face. And so, yeah, in the Disney, in the old classical Disney Christmas Carol, Jacob Marley is played by Goofy.
Oh my gosh, that's quite the, that's an interesting take on that.
Scrooge is, you know, perturbed, but he gets over it and he decides to, you know, have dinner. But then he hears, like, the sound of chains being dragged against the floor, and then we get the ghost of Jacob Marley.
Yeah. Hey, a ghost. You know, that made me excited. I loved that. I will just say that the depiction of him with the chains, and it was all related to money, right? The
money, greed, avarice. Yeah.
I thought that was pretty interesting and an aspect of that character and that portrayal that maybe I forgot, or maybe I feel like may not have made it into some Christmas Carol portrayals, just because it's usually chains, but kind of the significance of those chains, I feel like I was like, not privy to.
Yeah, and just him explaining, like, I forge each and every one of these links during my life through my selfish deeds.
Yeah.
Dark. And then one thing I noticed that was to me was really gothic, that I think is left out of a lot of adaptations, is right before Jacob Marley leaves, he like opens the window and looks out at Scrooge, and Scrooge sees a whole bunch of other ghosts that have chains. So that,
yeah.
So Jacob Marley isn't the only one. So are all these, you know, ghosts around, like, you know, moaning and wailing, like, just think of like Disney's Haunted Mansion. So yeah, because usually, again, probably for a budget and other things of pacing, you know, a lot of film adaptations don't mention that, but that was kind of a gothic moment that I'm like, you don't see that too often.
No, you're exactly right. I thought about that as well, that there was more prevalence of ghosts than I initially had remembered, but I think it's because they hadn't been depicted like you.
Yeah. But yeah, I remember when Goofy Jacob Marley goes to leaves and he trips down the stairs and he has his classic Goofy Goofy scream when he leaves.
That is just very fascinating that's the character they chose. But you know, whatever, that works.
Mm-hmm. And then you know, basically Marley tells him that you will be visited by three spirits. You know, expect the first one when the bell tolls one. And Scrooge is like, "Can't I just meet them all at once and get it over with?"
I know, that was pretty funny. He's like, "Let's make this convenient and let's just get it over with." That was pretty funny.
Yep. And then, so of course, he's first visited by the ghost of Christmas Past. And I was really interested in reading about this particular ghost, because in adaptations, this ghost is sort of the most varied and is open to the most interpretation when it comes to film adaptations, because it's, again, it's very ethereal. Like, it's like it's kind of a traditional ghost, but at the same time, it's described as being both old and young. And I can understand, like, given the sort of lack of clarity to it, that why interpretations have varied so much in adaptations.
Yeah, I was looking at, I'm very curious, I might watch this Christmas season. There was a 2019 TV miniseries on FX for A Christmas Carol, and the actor who plays, like, Gollum, is the ghost of Christmas.
Andy Serkis.
Yeah. So I wonder what that looks like. But because in my mind, I just kind of envision like almost like a, I don't know, a ghosty Father Christmas. If that is, that's just kind of what I saw in my mind's eye. But I'm not as familiar with other interpretations of him. But interesting. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, in Muppet's Christmas Carol, they decide to not go with the older guy. They lean into the more youthful side, where basically it's kind of a ghost of a little girl.
Okay. Oh.
And then in the, although it is, the ghost of Christmas Past is defined and described as masculine with he. But anyway. And in the Disney classic Christmas Carol, the ghost of Christmas Past is, you know, was it Jeremy Cricket from Pinocchio?
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's They I gotta see this because they're getting wild with their character choices, and I don't know how I feel about it at all.
Yeah, and so the ghost of Christmas Past. Are you familiar with My Little Pony?
I mean, just like the as it being a thing. I'm not like.
Yeah, well, it's just the ghost of Christmas Past in the My Little Pony version is Applejack.
Oh, that, well, I'll have to look that up. That sounds cute.
And so, yeah, so basically, Ghost of Christmas Past takes him for a joyride and flies him out the window and shows him basically the past and shows him initially as a boy, but also like when he was like a younger man, like starting his apprenticeship in banking or whatever. And who his first employer was Fezziwig. Was that his name?
I think so. Yeah, because that was a kind of a funny name.
Yeah, no, Fezziwig. And in Muppet's Christmas Carol, I guess he's played by Fozzie. So Fozziwig.
That seems like the obvious choice. Fozziwig.
And then, yeah, again, in Disney Christmas Carol, Fezziwig is played by Toad from Wind in the Willows.
Oh. Oh my gosh.
Alrighty then. And so, yeah, and then we get the vision of, you know, his fiance, Belle, and Belle's just like, you love money more than you love me. I'm leaving you.
Good for her. Because it sounds like he did. Like, what a jerk.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and then it kind of made me think of Persuasion and just the notion, especially in the Victorian and Regency periods, of like, what were the ethics of like feeling you had to save enough money before you got married, and like the sort of more modern interpretation of, even if we're like poor a little in the beginning, that's okay because we love each other. Like, you know, those themes are explored in Jane Austen's Persuasion, and my sister and I talked about them, but yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, and that's... You're exactly right. There's a little bit more. I feel like people kind of also talk about having kids that way. It's like, you know, there's no good time. And it's like, well, whatever. But yeah, getting married, you kind of built up a little bit of savings, or anyway, that's a whole realm of society and different traditions that I love to think and talk about, is different marriage traditions.
Yeah. And then finally, the last vision, the Ghost of Christmas Past gives him, is a vision of his old fiance with her like current husband, and he's like, oh, I saw Scrooge walking down the street, you know, a while ago. And she just says something like, oh, he's not the man he used to be, I don't care.
Yeah, you know, and maybe it's just me, when I was reading this, some of these scenes just kind of flowed one into the other, and I was kind of like, oh my gosh, we're already in a different, it wasn't blocked off for me in the way I read it. But so I think what they're establishing is Scrooge not very well liked.
Scrooge not very well liked, and he just gradually more and more, you know, got sucked into his money and everything else. And we also got a vision of like his sister, who we know is basically, you know, deceased now, because his only living relative is his nephew Fred. So yeah, he just never invested in personal relationships at all.
That's a lot of, I mean, I see a lot of that in the work world. A lot of people, you know, they focus on one thing and other things fall apart, and then they kind of wonder why. So I guess that's, again, why this story remains popular and prevalent.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And it was just interesting to see all these kind of little scenes, because of course in the adaptations, they're condensed to the most relevant ones. So there were a lot of scenes that I didn't know existed for all the ghosts.
Okay. So that, yeah, because you're exactly right. I've always kind of interpreted it as like, there's one big scene with the specific ghost, and there seem to be more little vignettes throughout these different sections. What's the one in the Muppet Show? That's the one I want to know. The Muppet Christmas Carol.
In the Muppet Show, the vignettes we get are the main one of him as a child, the one of Fezziwig's party, and then like the goodbye scene between Belle and Scrooge. And the Muppet Christmas Carol is a musical, so there are all a bunch of songs scattered throughout all of this as well.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, so there's a big goodbye scene, a goodbye song that Belle sings as she says, I'm leaving you.
Oh, well, what a way to go out.
Yeah. And then, yeah, and Scrooge is like, why do you torture me this way? And the ghost is just like, these are the shadows of your past. Because they are what they are, don't blame me.
You know what, that you were talking about how reading things like this is affecting us. I think I started thinking about the shadows of my past last night. And I was like, oh my God, this is like my own ghost of Christmas past coming to visit me. But it was just crazy. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then finally, Scrooge is left in peace, but only to be visited by the ghost of Christmas present. And this ghost is... Their interpretation is a little more, has a lot more consistent interpretation, because the ghost of Christmas present is basically this jovial giant.
In the version that I have, there are also illustrations, and he looks like Jesus with like a holly wreath, but like huge. That's jovial. I actually envisioned him as like very heavy, but this depiction of him, I mean, he literally looks like a depiction of Jesus with a robe and a holly wreath around his head. So interesting.
Yeah. In Muppet's Christmas Carol, it's not a Muppet I recognize. It's a like human sized puppet, you know, of a heavy guy. But I think that's a puppet that was specifically made for the Christmas Carol. I don't think it's a specific Muppet character.
That makes sense, because I was going to say, I don't know if I've ever, like, that one's ever crossed my path. But this guy seems pretty, like, he likes to party. I mean, he seems like
likes to party. And, you know, as I said, like, I got so hungry. I'm just like, I skipped breakfast and I was in the car listening to this on the audiobook. And there he's describing his throne of poultry and geese and meat. And I'm sausage links. And I'm like,
I was like, as I was trying to like eat a little healthier, and I'm reading about all this, like the, you know, when they visit people and they have the pudding and stuff like that. And I was just like, oh my, what am I doing to myself?
And definitely, you know, what did Dickens prioritize? Because, you know, I don't know the whole tradition of like gift giving and its relation to Christmas, but certainly with Dickens, it was not about presents. It was about food.
It was about the food. And I will tell you what, in my family, it's about the food too. So that's like,
I think it was interesting to see like so much of emphasis on the food, because again, it varies from family, but I feel like maybe in general in the American culture, because we also have Thanksgiving that is so close, like to me, I associate the food with Thanksgiving and the presents with Christmas. But I'm sure, you know, in other countries where they do not celebrate the oppression and genocide of indigenous peoples.
Yes.
They don't have a Thanksgiving, and therefore all of that love of food and the colder times of the year, all of that is jam-packed at Christmas.
Which I think that's a trend that I would like to see us follow. That I think that's wonderful. I'm a vegetarian, so part of this, I'm rereading the head up on the floor to form a kind of throne were turkeys, geese, game, poultry, brawn, great joints of meat, sucking pigs, long wreaths of sausages, mince pies, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, red hot chestnuts, cherry cheeked apples, juicy oranges, luscious plums, immense 12 cakes, and in seething bowls of punch that made the chamber dim with their delicious steam. Yeah, I was real psyched to read that when I'm like, oh my gosh, I just want to eat something. Also, you know, something I was thinking about, because Dickens really goes on a tangent a couple of times with the list of foods and things in these.
Yeah, the candy pears and apples and oranges. And I'm like, I get it.
Right. But, you know, something I was thinking of, I don't know. This book was written, published in 1843. He grew up, you know, is this kind of like a little bit of him trying to like rewrite his own history, or just kind of imagining like, oh, this is what I would like to have present, is all this just like gluttonous heap of food. I don't know, but I kind of thought a little bit about that, the time period, the, accessibility of these things to, people, yeah, you know, kind of who he was writing for. Just to, I don't know, was this like some people's romance novel a little bit? Like, oh man,
like their wish fulfillment?
Yeah, right. So I don't know, but that thought crossed my mind when I was reading it. It definitely was mine.
To a certain degree, because, you know, he writes a lot about like workhouses and stuff. And I don't know, is it Oliver Twist or one of his others where one of the boys in like the workhouse or whatever, it's, you know, the gruel that the food they're giving them is disgusting, but he still goes up and he's like, can I have more? And like the like boss is like, more? So like how insolent this little kid is that he dares ask for more food. So yeah, I think there is a bit of a fantasist element of it.
That's, and that just reminds me of this scene in Harry Potter when they first arrive at Hogwarts and they're, you know, having the big feast upon arrival.
Which is funny because that the guy who played Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe, when he was younger, he wasn't Oliver Twist himself, but he played one of like the background boys in the workhouse.
Oh, how funny. That's,
yeah, so he did play one of those like boys, you know, and had like a cameo, I think.
Oh, how funny. I had no idea. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, but yeah, and then in the Disney Christmas Carol, the Ghost of Christmas Present is played by the Disney giant from Jack and the Beanstalk.
Oh, so okay. Like, well, that makes sense.
So it's like, fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell a stingy little Englishman.
Oh my, it's like called out Scrooge there.
Yeah, there was the room that had all the food with the Ghost Christmas Present, and then they go outside and are seeing Christmas morning in the street, and then explaining everything on the grocers, like in the farmer's market.
Yeah, keep piling on the here we go, have another list of food.
The succulent grapes that would make their mouths water.
Yeah. Don't anybody read this if you're trying to lose a little bit of weight, because it's not fun. So just so, yeah, you know.
And then, and he's got like what, this magic, it was a horn he was drinking out of, and like he sprinkles it on like things to make them more delicious, and then people are arguing and he sprinkles some of the stuff on them, and then they end up happy again because it's Christmas.
Oh my god, he's kind of
it's like Cupid's arrow in a way. He's just pouring cheer all around.
I admire it. That's definitely a different, like a different path than Scrooge is wont to follow, I guess.
The two big scenes of Christmas Present is Bob Cratchit, of course, you know, seeing his family. And again, with the food, the goose and those boiling potatoes.
Yeah, right. Well, that's, again, it was like, is this, I keep thinking about the food and how it's probably, you know, this once a year thing that they're doing, and they're doing the best with what they have on the small.
Because I'm sure like these, you know, in the lower classes, even in the Victorian period, like I don't think they were eating meat consistently like we do nowadays. And so like, you know, if you're gonna, you know, splurge on one day, it's gonna be Christmas.
Right. Yeah, that seems to be, I mean, in America, anyway, I'm thinking about modern day America, but I like that. I think that's kind of a cool thing. I like the tradition of having special, you know, things that you eat once a year. I don't know. I think that's part of the reason so many people like Thanksgiving, because how many people eat like turkey and stuffing on a random, like, you know, on a random May day or something like that. So I appreciated the reiteration of, I didn't love reading the food descriptions because I was hungry, but I appreciated kind of like that being the importance, where in America we focus definitely on the presents. And kind of like you had said, there's not a lot of gift giving that I remember reading in this.
No, there was very, very little. It was all about food and being together to eat said food.
Yeah, well, cool.
Yeah. And so, of course, the person that makes the strongest impression on Scrooge is, of course, Tiny Tim.
If anybody remembers anything but A Christmas Carol, it's Scrooge and Tiny Tim. I think those are the two characters that stay with people.
Yeah, and basically, Tiny Tim, you know, despite, you know, being a cripple, he still sees the better side of life. And again, when Scrooge is asking, will Tiny Tim live? And the ghost says, if things remain the same, probably not. But if he's going to die, he better do it and decrease the surplus population.
Yeah, God. Which is them, your Christmas present, right? He's talking to, he's using Scrooge's words back at him.
Yeah, he's parroting back Scrooge's words, and Scrooge is so ashamed. And again, but hearing that in regards to Tiny Tim made me think about certain anti-maskers nowadays, where basically they don't care that, you know, basically it's every man for himself. And if it's not even, a question of, you know, it's one thing if you want to like try and hold people accountable, you know, for like maybe their financial situation, because even if you want to ignore certain institutionalized racism, sexism, yada, 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 but to literally hold someone's like physical health, like things that maybe they don't always, you know, they may have genetic conditions, things they cannot control, and just be like, oh, it's okay if you have a pre-existing condition and the virus kills you.
Yeah. Yeah. I can get pretty riled about that, but you're exactly right. Like that attitude is really sad. And that's why a lot of people have died that in this country.
Yeah. And I think one meme captured it very well in, you know, one meme I found scrolling on Facebook, like, don't you dare say all lives matter because 2 months ago you were going to sacrifice your grandma to the economy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's so spot on.
Yeah. So anyway, so just hearing the comparison of like, you know, the Ghost Christmas present, you know, asking rhetorically, like, why does your life matter more than like 10 Tiny Tims of the world?
Well, exactly. And Scrooge is, I think we can say this is like, Scrooge would have been an anti-masker right now. He would have kind of been like, whatever, screw Tiny Tim and his poor little crutch. There's some good morality points that to think about here. I mean, that whole thing that the people with the most, like you can't take it with you. Like I just listened to something this morning. It's like, you've never seen a U-Haul behind a hearse. So,
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. Did you come up with that on your own?
I did not. I attribute that to my Miss Mel Robbins. She's my favorite. So she's a speaker.
Okay. And then so basically, yeah. And then we get a few vignettes of present of like the guy coal miners and the guy the lighthouse, just reiterating the point that even though they have so little, they're just so happy on Christmas Day.
Yeah. And I think that, again, that's why this story resonates. It's like some people that we kind of get lost sometimes in the consumerism. Like I don't have the new iPhone, but I don't have a new iPhone. And if I acquire this, you know, I'll be happy. And then you see somebody who has very little. I think there's a movie I watched years ago called The Happiness Project, I think is what it was called. But it was basically, you know, the, you know, if you're cold and you, what's an easy way to kind of like help you be happier is to be warm, and just kind of those fundamental things. We definitely, and maybe this is just me rambling, but I feel like our society definitely doesn't thrive. The economy doesn't thrive on us being happy.
Well, materialism does not thrive on us being happy.
Right. That's materialism. You're exactly right. And that's the word I should have used, does not thrive on happiness.
Which makes me think of, again, all the books I'm buying and the notion of book two, the consumerism of books, because I tend to put consumption of books on a higher level because it's like books. You can't criticize me for buying books because that's intellectually stimulating, but it is a type of materialism.
I think that is some, I know you have talked about that on your channel, and I actually hadn't even thought about it too much that way. And until you provoked that question, and now I'm like, oh yeah, it's just, you know, another thing, especially right now with people on their Zoom calls and, you know, having bookshelves in their background.
My husband when he's interviewed by BBC.
Nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, I just say as long as it's genuine, and I feel like it's genuine where some people are just trying to, you know, flex a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then finally we get, oh, there is the little scene of Christmas present when Scrooge eavesdrops on Fred and his wife and like that whole Christmas party.
Yeah. I'm trying to refamiliarize myself with that.
It's not too exciting. It just kind of shows more Fred's goodwill that he's like, you know, it may be worthless, it may be stupid, but every year near Christmas, I'm always going to constantly ask him to like dine with us or have Christmas dinner with us in the hope that maybe I'm tugging at his heartstrings until he'll finally give in one day.
good for him for his persistence, because that is not a trait that I have. I would be like, fine, you don't want to come, don't come. But I admire that. That's
so it seems Fred, to a certain extent, can understand and pities his uncle in ways that others don't. And I don't know, maybe it's like maybe he has a little bit more information about Scrooge's past, probably from his mother.
Oh, yeah. Very true.
Yeah. But yeah, and then there's, of course, there's the game they play, like what am I thinking of, yes or no? And then finally they say it's an animal, and then they guess and guess and guess and finally realize, oh, an animal that's like mean and growls and lives in the city, it's Scrooge, and everyone laughs.
That's kind of sad. I mean, like, I guess he's so
disliked. It was interesting because I felt like when I read it, like, you know, visually in the adaptations, they play that up a lot. And especially in Muppet's Christmas Carol, because you see Scrooge, like, feel like you see that his feelings are hurt. But honestly, I didn't get too much reaction from Scrooge from that specific jab at him in the book.
No, I don't think, you know, I until you mentioned it, I really remember it, because I don't remember it being like, oh man, you know, what a, he wasn't like, oh gosh, how dare they call me that. He's just, yeah, it didn't resonate with me. And I guess it didn't that much with him.
Yeah. And then so Ghost of Christmas Present is growing old and leaves him. And we're left with the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, who is basically the Grim Reaper.
Badass. I'm looking at
like, why did Dickens basically want the Ghost of Christmas Future to be death?
Maybe because it is all of our futures. That's really dark of me to say.
But points on the gothic side.
Yes, I know. This cover for the FX show is so cool. It's got like this huge death figure and like an Ebenezer Scrooge. It almost looks like a Dementor kind of. I don't know. I thought that was an interesting choice, especially when I think my modern mind thinks of future and I think of like very sleek, like Ex Machina kind of robot-like future. I know that we're talking about ghosts here, but it was an interesting choice to pick death. Like I said, pretty bad, but that's just
basically. So Scrooge is kind of shadowing in Disney's Christmas Carol. The Ghost of Christmas Future is actually Pete, but he's in a robe and he's cloaked and you don't see his face until the end.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he's like smoking a cigar.
Oh, nice.
But anyway, so Scrooge is, you know, hearing all these people talk about this poor wretch that has died, and clearly no one liked him, and are, you know, they absconded with some of his possessions to like to pawn them off for money. And there is one group of gentlemen that they overhear, and it's like, all I know is that he's dead. It's going to be quite a small funeral. I don't know anyone's going. I would go if lunch was provided.
Yeah.
Well, and it's so funny because in Muppet's Christmas Carol, they do this conversation almost verbatim. But it's so funny because the Muppets that they have do that conversation are pigs.
Aww.
And they're pigs. And so when they say, like, I would go if lunch was provided, like, I would assume that because they used pig Muppets that that was improvised, that they did it for those puppets, but to actually read it in the book, that is actually what they said, and they chose the pig Muppets based on that.
That was, yeah, that was, first of all, that reminds me of some people, like, that's kind of one of the reasons they go to a funeral is because, like, well, at least where I've grown up, there's like a little post
luncheon.
Yeah, a little lunch, which it's always kind of, I don't know. That tradition is always really odd to me, but that's funny that they're pigs, because I imagine them being like just real thin, like hungry people. I guess, I don't know, maybe pigs just want some food, but that's pretty cute that they actually portrayed that, and then interesting that it was like a actual thing in this story.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so he sees all the people talk about, you know, how great it is that this guy is dead. And then he's like, go take me somewhere where people will like bring goodness because of this man's death or whatever. And so instead of like trying to comfort him in any way, the Ghost of Christmas Future sends him to one of his, like, you know, people that he lends money to, and is basically like, yay, he's dead, so we still have, you know, some time to work out all this debt that we owe.
Yeah. And don't they like kind of like trade his stuff? Like, they kind of I mean, that's, I guess maybe that's what I,
well, that's the earlier scene where some people like got into his house and like were pawning off his stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But this is like the vignette right after that, where again, it's one of like the tenants basically like, okay, I don't know who exactly the loan is going to get transferred to, but like this buys us time and they're really happy about it.
Very dark. Like obviously not a very well-liked person.
Yeah.
And
then finally we get Bob Cratchit, and of course Tiny Tim is dead.
Poor Tiny Tim. So this is something that, or maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit, but that kind of just really almost put him over the edge. I think I know what the final thing was, but yeah, poor Tiny Tim.
Yep. And yeah, because the final thing is, of course, he sees his own tombstone.
Right. Yeah, then that really has him go, oh my gosh, like, don't do this to me. I will honor Christmas in my heart and keep it all year. So he really loses his mind.
Yep, and then he finally wakes up and it's Christmas and everything's back to normal. And he decides, I'm going to be a good guy now and be nice.
Yeah, and then apparently that changes his life and he goes on to be part of Tiny Tim's life. As far as we know, he lives and...
He first has Christmas, spends Christmas Day with Fred and their family and friends, and then he secretly sends a turkey to the Cratchits, and then like the day after he like decides to give Bob Cratchit a raise and everything.
Yeah, he thinks that Bob thinks he's going to like
lose his job.
Yeah, lose his job because he was late, and he was like, no, this is great, I'm actually going to give you more money. And then he's old and jolly, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's funny. In Muppet Christmas Carol, Bob Cratchit is played, of course, by Kermit. And, you know, Mrs. Cratchit is Miss Piggy. Uh-huh. And so when this confrontation happens between Kermit and Scrooge, by the end of the story, like, and Scrooge is like, and therefore I'm going to raise your salary. And Miss Piggy's like, and I'm going to raise your, like, about to beat the crap out of him. And she's like, what?
That's cute. I'm definitely gonna have to watch that this holiday season, because I know Bean is Bean Tiny Tim the little rabbit.
Oh no, but Bean the little rabbit, he is just like a street urchin that you see throughout. No, Tiny Tim is just a little baby Kermit, like a little frog.
Oh, okay, because I remember Bean from, I don't know, I think I had a little stuffed Bean when I was a kid.
Oh, and that is A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens.
I'm really glad we read this. I feel like I'm better acquainted with the story. I'm going to be really interested to do the Gothometer with you on this.
Right, let's get to it.
Cool, all right.
Okay, so category number one, atmosphere and setting. What do you think?
I think this is going to be an interesting one, because the atmosphere, I wouldn't really call it super gothic in what I'm traditionally thinking as gothic. I'm going to give it a 4 for atmosphere. It still takes place in London, England. And I don't know. That always has a little bit of gothic feel to it, even though that's not a requirement.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of in the same camp. I give it a 5 because, again, like there is, like with Dickens, there is a certain element of his works that are gothic. Like for my gothic book club, I read Mystery of Edwin Drood by Charles Dickens, which is super gothic. And so like, it's just this particular story, he chooses to emphasize all the food rather than the disgusting, grimy streets of Victorian England, and to me, like, that is sort of like the beginnings of, you know, urban Gothic in my mind. But again, yeah. it's not in this story, like it's in the other stories like Oliver Twist and Great Expectations and all of that. So for this one, I'm giving it a 5.
I think I admire that.
Yeah. Alrighty then, category number 2, the past.
I'm laughing because like a whole section of this book is about his past. So I'm just going to give it an 8. It's a short book. I would say if, you know, like almost a third of the story is taking place, it's kind of a weird like combination of past and future because of that supernatural category, which we'll get to. But what were your thoughts on this?
I gave it a 10 because it's the freaking ghost of Christmas past who takes him on a joyride through the pensive of his past.
Perfect.
Alrighty then. And then category number 3, the supernatural.
I'm going to give it a 10 because it contains my favorite things, apparently, other than vampires. Ghosts. Lots of ghosts.
Who is your favorite ghost?
Like in this story?
Yes.
Well, that's a great question, Amy. I like the Ghost of Christmas Present because he seems like a fun person. As far as like ominous, scary depictions of ghosts would be the Ghost of the Christmas Future. The Ghost of Christmas Past was kind of like, he didn't do a lot for me. The other two to me were more characters.
They were more memorable. And again, which is why people kind of veer in different directions for the Ghost of Christmas Past in different adaptations.
That makes sense.
Yeah. For me, again, obvious choice, number 10 for Supernatural. And again, I think my favorite ghost is actually Jacob Marley.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Just because, you know, I don't know, because I feel like, you know, they're Ghost of Christmas, but they're not so much ghosts as they are kind of like deities or like gods in a way. Yes. Like they're not a specific imprint of a departed soul. And Jacob Marley is much more within the traditional category of what we would could perceive to be a ghost who is haunted by his previous, you know, misdoings.
Right. And that's a great point to make it to talk about more of a deity, because I think Bacchus is who I thought about when I thought about Christmas Present. That's the vision I had in my mind.
Alrighty then. And then category number 4, heroes, heroines, and villains.
I don't know what to give. I'm just going to give this a 4 because I don't really know what to give it. We don't really have a hero. I guess you could argue that a villain, he's kind of like a bunch of things into one. So I may have rated it lower, but I'm just going to give it a 4 because I don't know what else to say. How about you?
I'm going to give it an 8 because, you know, even though we don't have the very traditionally defined tropes in those three embodied in three people, but the fact that the whole point of the story is Scrooge's redemption.
Mm. Good point.
Like the fact that that is such a an emphasis on making sure he goes from a villain to a hero. Like it's not following like the typical, like, you know, externalizing those characteristics, but we do get hero and villain in one person, and I appreciate that nuance. So I'm giving it an 8.
I regret my 4, but I'll stick with it. Yes, those are great.
And then finally, category number 5, mystery.
I feel like I'm going to rate this lower than, I don't really know. I'm going to give it a 3 because I don't really know what the mystery was. Could it be, is Scrooge going to stop being such a jerk? Sure. But I guess, you know, I'm thinking more of in the traditional mystery category. I guess, is Tiny Tim going to live? So I'm going to give it a 3.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 5 because, again, there isn't so much mystery. Like, because literally Jacob Marley maps it out for him. You're going to be visited by 3 spirits who are going to teach you a lesson.
Right, right.
Like, that's what's going to happen tonight. So there's no mystery there. I think it's more, again, it's one of those mysteries. It's not so much the what, but it's more the how. And it's like the mystery of what are, you know, again, some of the mystery has been spoiled for us because it's such a staple in pop culture. But, you know, just the mystery of, like, what is the Ghost of Christmas Past going to do? What is Ghost of Christmas Present going to do? What is Ghost of Christmas Future going to show? And, like, just all and more about the how than the what or the why.
Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, I think I wonder, you know, if you were kind of like if this story weren't familiar and you were just kind of cracking the book for the first time, how you would perceive that, because I think that would be a kind of a fun mystery, like, oh, where is this ghost? All right, I totaled our scores, which are, they're kind of funny.
Yeah, so I gave it 38, right?
Yes, and I think I gave it 29.
That is, so yeah, that's the larger discrepancy than usual.
Yeah, I think though, you know, if I had heard your thoughts, I would have totally cheated and copied some of your.
No, you got it. Just because yours are different doesn't mean that they're wrong.
That is very true. I think you made strong cases for the category.
Again, there are different gothics.
Yes, very true. Very true.
As Anne Rad, as you explained in Anne Radcliffe's story.
Yes, I think I just maybe did that to make myself feel better. Like, But I think it was really interesting to read this as a Gothic novel, because I don't think it's really something that people put into the categorization of Gothic. But I think we, based on our totals, can make a strong argument that there are Gothic elements in this book.
Yeah. And as, again, and I know that, you know, Charles Dickens had Gothic leanings in some of his other works, like especially like Mystery of Edwin Drood, but I just never considered Christmas Carol to be a part of it. And it just begs that question of, you know, is a story Gothic enough just by having ghosts?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And I don't know. I don't know if I have a great answer to it, because sometimes, you know, I actually was talking to my mother-in-law, my sister-in-law about Rebecca, and they were surprised to see it listed as a Gothic novel while I'm sitting there and like, oh yeah, it's got this, 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 this. But, you know, they were like, I'd never really thought of it that way. So yeah, I don't know.
The Gothic. Yeah, so I think definitely Christmas Carol is one of those earlier manifestations of kind of, you know, presenting supernatural elements, but not directly in a traditional Gothic way, such as Dracula or Frankenstein, that the actual, again, the ghosts are benevolent and are serving a purpose.
Yes. Yeah. Which, I mean, I think that's great. Good job, ghosts.
Yeah, they're serving a purpose of redemption, not going to be like, I'm going to haunt you and drag your soul down into the bowels of hell.
I can appreciate, I would prefer, if I were to have a ghost encounter, I would prefer it to, you know, not the dragging the hell kind, personally.
Yeah. Alrighty then. So I'm going to, let me pull out, you know, I checked out Christmas Carol on Hoopla, so I have it on my phone, so I need to do a random rereading.
Yeah.
So let's see, what can I, which section, okay. I am a mortal, Scrooge remonstrated, and liable to fall. Bear but a touch of my hand there, said the spirit, laying it upon his heart, and you shall be upheld in more than this. As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall and stood upon an open country road, the fields on either hand. The city had entirely vanished. Not a vestige of it was to be seen. The darkness and the mist had vanished with it, for it was a clear, cold winter day with snow upon the ground.
Yeah, setting the scene, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah, this there is setting the scene of, again, first ghost of Christmas Past. And you know what it made me think of? It made me think of the Pensieve in Harry Potter.
I'm excited for our Harry Potter podcast, so I can learn all these nuances of Harry Potter that you are very familiar with. So can you tell me a little bit more about?
The Pensieve is basically, you know, that device where it kind of stores memories, and basically you can go, your consciousness can kind of like go into it and look at memories, like watch them like in scenes, like basically in the exact same way that Scrooge is watching the past.
Oh my God, that sounds like the most terrifying thing in existence at some points in my life. that's, I mean, I could see
its benefit. Skeletons you got in your closet, Jess?
Nothing, you know, I don't know. That just makes me laugh. I just think about, I just had a good time in college. So I was just thinking about, you know, some of those memories I think people have that they kind of go, oh gosh. I was around before social media was a huge thing. So that's always good news for me.
Oh dear. All right then, and that concludes our Christmas special episode for A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Thank you so much, everyone. Tune in next time, and we will be going over a pretty modern classic, but still very good one, The Woman in Black by Susan Hill.
I'm intrigued by this. I think I saw the movie a long time ago, and with Daniel Radcliffe, and I'm excited to read it.
Yes, and I just figured out how to check out ebooks for my library, and so I was able to get Woman in Black, like I could. I had to type in my library code, and then it shifted me to like Amazon to like Kindle. So literally they use Kindle, so I basically have it checked out from Kindle.
Awesome. Yeah. That's a quite the little maneuver it does there, but I think I've done that as well with some of my books. So cool.
Yes, and I just checked it out today, which means I have exactly 14 days by our next recording session to read it.
I'm in the same boat.
Well, again, everyone, tune in next time and have a very Merry Christmas. Bye.